You're listening to the Humankind Well-Being Forum from humanmedia.org.
Can you define the immune system in the human body?
Well, the immune system, first and foremost, is our first line of defense. Whether it's an infectious agent that we're being attacked with, or whether it's trauma or injury, or whether it's our own cells rebelling against us, the immune system, over evolution, over tens of thousands of years, has learned to intercede on our behalf.
So help me understand what we do know about the relationship between a doctor offering hope to a patient who has a cancer diagnosis and their immune system.
Well, the first line of evidence comes, oddly enough, from autopsy series. Women in the seventh and eighth decade of life who died of natural causes were studied, and in particular their breast tissue was studied. A very high percentage of them, 30 or 40%, were found to be cohabitating with small breast cancers, and these cancers were not threatening them in any way, shape, or form.
So cohabitating means they've got it, but it's not bothering them.
It wasn't threatening them at all. And this led to a hypothesis that there are breast cancers that start, that try to take root, but that our immune systems kill. In the early 1990s, two genes were discovered called BRCA1 and BRCA2. And these genes are what is called tumor suppressor genes. They are present in all of us, male and female. And they are mostly important in the breast and in the ovary. And these genes do nothing except watch for abnormal DNA. And when DNA comes along that's abnormal, they either fix it or they kill the cell. If something suppresses the BRCA gene, stress, something in the immune system, then a patient's chance of getting cancer actually goes up. Now, there are families who inherit defective copies of BRCA1 and 2, and they're at a very, very high risk for both breast and ovarian cancer. We've been studying what role these genes play in the average population, and the early results seem to indicate that an intact, healthy immune system plays a role in preventing these tiny cancers from taking root.
And an intact, healthy immune system is strengthened by a positive attitude?
Well, my own personal belief is that it is. When you get down to the nitty-gritty of measuring the immune system, it turns out that it's quite a challenge to do that. And we still lack some of the technology that would be required to actually put numbers on the immune system. However, we've known for a long time that athletes, for example, have far less types of certain cancers. For example, women in college who've achieved a letter in a sport are more likely not to get breast cancer than a woman who was not an athlete in college. That's well documented. Alcohol consumption has been shown to increase the rates of breast cancer, and there's a clear link with weakening of the immune system with increased alcohol intake. So I have to admit that our evidence is somewhat indirect, and it's a little bit obtuse, but it makes sense from a common sense level. Aside from that, the patient who goes into this with a very optimistic, very positive attitude, in my experience, does better.
And how do they manifest that positive attitude? What do you notice in their words, in their outlook, in their behavior, that tips you off that this is somebody who has that frame of mind?
I think it comes shining through in the first 2 to 3 visits. Someone who makes it clear to you, I want to understand your recommendations. I want to follow them. I'm going to beat this. I've got 3 grandchildren. I want to see them grow up. Someone who you see has goals. Someone who says, my 40th wedding anniversary is in 5 years. I'm going to be there. That type of person you know, emerges from the pack very clearly. Someone who handles adversity well, in all of the cancer fields, we spend a lot of our time breaking bad news to people. And there's really never an easy way to do it. Watching someone understand bad news and assimilate bad news and watching how they process it and watching how they deal with it can also tell you a lot about someone's spirit and their optimism.
And do you mean how the person receives the news at the moment when you deliver it to them?
Not only partially, yes, but also you're almost always going to see them back in 3 days, a week, 2 weeks, a month. Breast cancer patients in particular are seen very often by members of their team. And so you really see someone process this. I have patients I've seen 3 times a year for 15 years. So you really do get to know them pretty well. And you see how they've processed this bad news.
Let's talk about depression experienced by many people with cancer. First of all, what would be your sense as to the proportion of people who receive a cancer diagnosis who exhibit depression?
That's a great question. I think if we really are sensitive to it, I think that as many as 1 in 3 of our patients probably at some point have some level of depression. About half of those people will be identified by a system as having depression, and only half of that half will actually get intervention. So I think in this country, a small proportion of patients with real identifiable depression are actually treated.
I have to say I'm astonished that 2 out of 3 people who get a cancer diagnosis don't get depressed by it.
Right, right.
How do we explain that?
Well, part of the answer to your question is that we really can be optimistic with a large subset of our patients who we expect to do very, very well.
I was out in Stanford talking to Dr. David Spiegel not long ago, and he was pointing out that cancer is no longer, in most cases, a fatal illness. It's now a chronic illness. And I guess that changes everything.
Right. I think that is actually the goal, the realistic goal today for breast cancer. We have not had success in eradicating breast cancer from the bone. We've not had success in eradicating it from the liver. We have had success in getting it to go into remission so that the patient and the cancer cells are peacefully coexisting with the disease quiet. So it really does become more of a chronic illness for the patient, something they're living with. This is a good strategy for the time being because there are 200 or 250 drugs in the developmental pipeline right now, 10 of which might be the golden bullet. So you can argue, yes, we're buying time. I think that's valuable.
And again, just looking at the 2/3 of people who do not get depressed, obviously they have some reaction to the fact that they went to a doctor and they were told that they have cancer. How are the people who manage to avoid depression coping more constructively?
Right. Well, going back to the for a moment to the 1/3 who are depressed, some of that is very realistic baggage that they bring into the relationship. If you watched your mother die of breast cancer and now you have breast cancer, this is a very real enemy. This is not some poster disease out there. You've seen what it can do. So part of the answer is that many of the 1/3 who really get depressed have seen the worst that breast cancer can do. In the other 2/3, we see great spouses, great partners, supportive families. People will come in with 8 friends who say, I'm going to be there for you. And
have you literally seen?
Oh, absolutely. We actually had to enlarge our consultation rooms because patients were bringing in an average of 5 and 6 people with them, which is terrific. The breast cancer community is remarkable in how people reach out to each other, how they support one another. It is absolutely inspiring.
You've been listening to the Humankind Well-Being Forum. I'm David Freudberg. For more information and to learn about Walking Through the Storm, our radio documentary project for cancer survivors, please go to humanmedia.org. Thank you for listening.